language that everybody here can easily understand.
Just because it's late doesn't mean we're done yet.
And the server, get the pen!
And the quarterback, you kidding me, coach?
There's still plenty more hits to dish out.
Well, he really hit the shit out of that one, didn't he? Look at that, he hit the f***ing ball. That gets a free stay.
This is Late Hits. Late Hits. On ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph. Get Physical RX. And by Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
Look in my eyes, what do you see?
This is the only live, local, consistent evening sports radio show in the city of Houston. Late Hits, ESPN 97.5. Patrick Creighton with you, 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN on the HRMP listener line, on the text line, on Twitter, at PCreighton1. Big Gianni!
Big Bad John.
On the other side of the glass, the master controls at Third Coast Johnny. On the Twitch stream, twitch.tv/ESPN975. On the ESPN975 app, ESPN975.com. Hey Alexa, hey Google, play ESPN975. Take us with you everywhere you go, because you know you want to. Now, I went and did something today. Remember the other day I was talking about, I was ready to go do something I never thought I'd do. It was two things. Number one, get a truck. Number two, get a hybrid. I'm not really
wow.
a big truck guy. I like my cars. I like cornering. I like driving faster than I should. Can't really do that in a truck.
What would you
can in a straight line, but you can't corner.
No, you can't. What would make you even think about getting a truck? We've had several conversations while you've been looking for cars, so, and that's never been an option.
The reason why I moved into, becoming a truck person as opposed to a car person. Number one, if somebody cries in the greater Houston area, our streets are flooded. Number two, for some reason, probably the flooding, every driveway is literally like a 90-degree angle. As I get older and my back hurts a lot more, I've had back spasms all week and I hate them, and they're bad. It's easier for me to get into a truck than to get into a car. It's also easier to get out of the truck as opposed to the car. And between the need for height of water and my not wanting to get down and up out of things, the truck seems like it is a better fit for me as I get older and my knees do bad things each day. I put $70 to fill my tank twice a week. That getting old in a hurry. I literally pay as much in gas. I pay more in gas than I do car payment plus insurance each month. I pay more in freaking gas. And those prices aren't going down anytime soon. So I decided getting a hybrid vehicle, one that gets north of 40 miles per gallon, might be in my best interest considering, well, taxes went up $300 a month on the house. My son is going to college. My daughter has her Hawaii trip with the school band this year, which is nearly twice as much as it was for my son's Hawaii trip with the school band 4 years ago. I have to allocate more money to different things, so I need to not spend $150 a week in friggin' gas. So I went and ordered a hybrid truck today. It'll be here in 5 months. Learned something today about hybrid. Well, I'd been doing research on it, but I made some calls to people in the industry and asked questions and stuff. And you have to order your vehicle. If you don't order your vehicle, and you try to buy one, quote, off the lot, assuming there is one on the lot, you might pay anywhere from $5,000 to $30,000 over sticker, getting in a bidding war for a vehicle that's on a lot. Hell no! Hell freaking no!
You're talking brand new, right? Not used?
Yeah, no, it's on brand new. I'm not paying $5,000. I'm definitely not paying $30,000. I ain't paying $5,000 over sticker. Bleep that, and bleep the hell out of that. Not doing it. But 5 months to get a car.
I think they're still dealing with the shortages for the parts for the cars, too.
They absolutely are. That's why, you know, if you have, you know, like a Super Duty truck, like a 350 or a 450, those things are probably selling for like $50,000 more than what they retailed for originally. You can't get them. I love that new Bronco, the convertible Bronco, the full size one.
Convertible?
Yeah. Oh, what? Dude, oh, you haven't seen it?
No.
Right. So the new Bronco.
Is it also a hybrid? Is that what you were talking about?
No. The new Bronco isn't a hybrid, unfortunately, but it comes as a convertible. Take the whole top off. It's kind of like a Wrangler. $30,000 over list. Nope. I like it. Not that much. I'm not paying $80,000 for a vehicle. I did that once, never again. I once paid $85,000 for a vehicle. I had it for 2 years. I got to drive it for 5 months. The rest of the time, it was in the shop. I had the car not quite 4 months. I got T-boned. It took them 4 months to fix the car because they wouldn't total it out. I got it back. I didn't even have it a month. The roof caved in. Gone for another month. I get it back. 2 weeks later, computer shuts down and dies. Well, I'm doing 80 miles an hour on the Long Island Expressway. 6 weeks in the shop.
You don't want to tell us the type of car it was?
Lexus LS 430.
Okay. Well, I'm surprised Lexus had that.
Well, because I got T-boned. I got T-boned by a woman doing 40 miles an hour, T-boned me, because she was painting her nails, and she wasn't paying attention to the stoplight. Best part about it was she was painting her nails. She just came out of the nail salon and got them done. She gets in the car. She starts painting them again. Forgets, there's a stoplight. I shouldn't accelerate.
She got, obviously she was at fault. But that's just as bad as being, you know, drunk or too tired to drive. She should have gotten probably a lot more.
Realistically,
for that.
They should have totaled the car out. The car was mangled. And I didn't move. For like 8 days, my back was so janked up from that. And what happened is they couldn't really fix the car. The frame of the car was damaged so badly they couldn't keep its integrity. So the roof caves in. Then the computer dies. Took me 6 weeks to get the car back after the computer died. The roof caved in again on the other side. I'm like, I don't want this back. Y'all are killing me. It took me 2 years for them to finally say, okay, the car is totaled, we can't fix it. That included two more electrical shortages. They couldn't fix everything wrong with the car. They'll never spend that kind of money on a car again. Now, granted, I had the money for that back then. I don't quite have that same money now. But, I won't spend that kind of money on a car. Because as soon as it gets hit, who knows the hell you're getting out of it? I drive so many miles that in a normal car environment, I kill 60% of the value in the car in 12 months. Again, 1 year, I'll have at least 30,000 miles on the car. And that's trying not to drive. So, yeah, I won't spend that kind of money on a car again. But I also don't want to pay $150 a week in gas, which in a month is probably going to be $160 a week.
Well, you mentioned hybrid. What were you looking at hybrid-wise?
I was looking at a Ford pickup. But
I didn't know they had hybrid pickups.
You have a hybrid.
I do.
T- Tell me about your experience with the hybrid.
So far, it's been great. Like my, I get like 37 miles per gallon. Now, I don't drive as much as I used to because I moved from Spring area down here, 5 minutes from the station. So that's been a real help with the gas prices going up. But the hybrid hasn't given me any issues, and my gas mileage is like almost 37 miles per gallon.
See,
it's great.
I need that in my life. I need less cost. Because you know what? College is expensive. I got to come up with $28,000 between tuition and then room and board. $28,000. Of which, you know, what am I going to get in student loans? For my, well, something to get like $5,000. So that means I got to put $23,000. I don't want him saddled with unbelievable student loan debt. So.
He didn't end up with any scholarships?
My son had a 99 average. Your 4.0 was not considered top 10% of his class because he didn't take AP classes. As someone who took AP classes, the only difference between AP and regular classes is the extra homework. That's it. You don't learn anything different. It's not like in AP, oh, we're going to teach you all this stuff. These other turd buckets, they're not smart enough to know. It doesn't work like that. It's just you do more homework. And, you know, having experienced trying to do that and play sports and work, there was like an hour of sleep a day. And I didn't want that. I wanted him to be able to do all his extracurricular activities and have a life. And he got to. So he enjoyed his years of high school. And now he's ready to go to college. And he got accepted to the ATEC program, which is hard for incoming freshmen to get right in. But he got into the ATEC program. And I now have to buy him like a $3,000 computer. But he's excited. He's ready to go. And I'm kind of like, all right, what's the house going to be like with my son not around? This is like a real conversation I have with myself. It's weird. The idea of, like, your child not being there. So.
You'll be the only man in the house, right?
Yeah. Even the dog is female. Now, in the last 24 hours, there has been a heavyweight fight between Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher and our buddy Sam Kahn Jr. from The Athletic, the college football techspert. He's going to join us right now. Next.
You are listening to Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
Joining us right now on the HRNP guest line, he is the college football techspert. All things Texas college football. He's a savant. He just knows everything. I could ask him about something that happened in like 1953. He knows. He knows the day. He knows the time. He knows what play. It's unbelievable. I don't know how he does it. It's our buddy Sam Kahn Jr. What's up, Sam? How you doing?
I'm good. Very exhausted by a long day, but very well. How are you?
What, you mean there's stuff going on around here that you got to pay attention to or what?
Just a little bit.
So, Nick Saban, I don't know exactly what to make of these comments from Nick Saban. I guess it was essentially at a fundraiser. Is that kind of how this all comes down? He's at a fundraiser. He's sitting on the stage talking and basically says, well, A&M buys everybody, and we can't do that. Was he more taking shots at A&M or more hat in hand, please give me more money?
Probably a little bit of both. I think we all know, those of us who have followed college football for a long time know that Saban does not see things usually without thinking about them first. He may have gotten a little hasty on this one by throwing out the blanket accusation at Jimbo Fisher and Deion Sanders and those two respective schools and programs. But there's no doubt that he seems to be a little uncomfortable on the surface with the direction NIL is going, at least as it relates to the recruiting space. Not necessarily with the current rosters, but, and a lot of coaches are, but it upended the apple cart a little bit in recruiting last year, as ever since it got instituted. And I think he's just bothered that Texas A&M beat them in recruiting. Like, they're number one in the recruiting class in 2022. They signed what 247 ranked as the best recruiting class of all time with 8 5 stars in it. Since 2010, no school other than Alabama and Georgia has finished number one in the recruiting rank. So A&M crashing in has upset Saban. It's upset Kirby Smart. It's upset a lot of other people. And I think he threw that out because people have talked about this under the shadows. Now, has anybody offered any proof of this? No, not a shred of it. And I talked to Ross Bjork, the athletic director, and I asked him, I was like, how many of your 2022 recruits have NIL deals? And he said most of them don't. Most of our guys don't have deals. They have a few guys on campus that have enrolled early that do, but most of them don't at this point. And so at this point, it's just, to me, it's a lot of bluster, but it's also a lot of frustration from Saban because he doesn't like how things have been upended, but also a call to his donors like, hey, if this is the game, then we need to start playing it too.
Now, Sam, listen, I've got a concussion sheet 6 pages long, and sometimes I forget stuff. But didn't Saban's quarterback get a $1 million NIL deal last year before he ever took a snap?
Yeah, he did. I was actually there in San Antonio at the Texas High School Coaches Association Convention. And that was, I think, the closing address was Nick Saban right before everybody left town. And he started talking about his, you know, everything that's gone on in his coaching career. A lot of it was about coaching. And then he went into Bryce Young and NIL and said, you know, I've got a quarterback who hasn't taken a snap yet, who's got almost 7 figures in NIL deals. And a lot of people saw that as a telegraph from Saban to recruits to say, hey, if you come play quarterback here, look what our quarterback got, and he hasn't even taken a snap yet. So the thing is about that, though, and this is a tricky thing, and this is the tough part that the NCAA has put everybody in, is that the NIL policy they instituted in July is very loose. There's really only two main tenets to it that you can't do, two no-nos, that you can't have any recruiting inducements and you can't have pure pay-for-play. Now, collectives and donors around a lot of these major programs have gotten smart about it, and they're working with the compliance departments at the schools to do everything buttoned up. Ross Bjork told me he feels confident that everything that A&M has done has been buttoned up, and they've been able to do their best to kind of work around the rules to maximize what they give players across the country. Tennessee has done it at a really high level. Texas has done it at a really high level, and some of these schools have not been shy about it, but yeah, Saban, as far as current players, yeah, that stuff obviously has been out in the open. Saban was not shy about bragging about it. He even said today on air that I think all the players in his roster earned, I think, in total about $3 million worth of NIL deals last year.
Because, I don't know, it seems like if you're bragging about NIL last year and you're crying about NIL this year, that's like a new level of hypocrisy for a guy that seems to be in the SEC title game and or Final Four every single year. But wait, now I need to bitch. Is Dabo Swinney getting on this bandwagon anytime soon? Because usually when Saban complains about something, Dabo's about 24 hours behind.
It takes a few minutes before Dabo gets it up. No, but here's the thing is Saban, and like I said, everybody, this is changing a little bit of the power structure of the sport, and I think they're a little bit uneased by it. He mentioned competitive balance today. That's one of the reasons why he's concerned, and I find that a little laughable, because what competitive balance do we have right now when you have the Alabamas and the Texases and the Texas A&Ms, Ohio States, and Clemson of the world that have 9-figure athletic budgets? And you have the Akrons and the New Mexico States and North Texases and the Rices of the world that have a fraction of that. Are you telling me that's an equal playing field? They're all supposedly in the same subdivision. They're all in the FBS. And so you're telling me that that's an equal playing field right now? It's not. There are different resources and there's a different power structure in the sport, and there are some haves and there's have-nots. NIL is only going to exacerbate that. And I think right now everybody's reacting the way they are is because everything is so unpredictable. College football coaches are creatures of habit. They love to have control, and this is an uncontrolled market because it's so new. We're not even a full year into this, and people are still grappling with the effects of it. It's still evolving, and I think coaches are just a little unnerved by it because they cannot control it the way they control their rosters, the way they control their coaching staff, meal plans, academics, every other aspect of the program they control. They cannot control this. Because they're not supposed to be involved in it in the first place.
We're talking with Sam Kahn, college football techspert from The Athletic. You know, even right there in the SEC, you know, Vanderbilt must feel like the bastard stepchild because, you know, they don't get to throw all that money at athletics that the way Alabama does. I can't imagine what Mississippi State's thinking, like, please, sir, can I have some more? How do we get this? Now, Jimbo was pretty hot under the collar today, and it seemed like this was very personal for Jimbo, who, you know, used to coach under Saban back in the day, but was this Jimbo, I'm hot, I'm putting on a show for my supporters and for my university, or was this really personal for Jimbo?
No, this was really personal for Jimbo. I think you could see it in his face. He was seething this morning. I mean, just by the fact that he called a press conference specifically for this instance. The last couple times he's had these rants, which he's had a few of them since February signing day, as rumors have circulated about NIL deals for players. But this one was one he called to respond to Nick. And like you said, they're former colleagues. They've been friends in the past. And they've both spoken highly of each other and respectfully of each other all the way up until this year. And they traded some barbs last year. I remember, what was it, Jimbo said that he was going to beat Nick's rear, you know, when he's there, and Nick kind of joked about it. But that was very lighthearted. I still think they were still in a good place. But the fact that this is somebody that he's worked with that so blatantly called him out and made blatant accusations that obviously at this point are we don't have any proof of, Jimbo, I think, was really hurt by that. And I think more than anything, he was hurt for his players. That was the thing that has struck me, is that he seemed to be really hurt for the players and his team, because to Jimbo, he sees it as an accusation that these players only chose Texas A&M for money. They didn't choose it for the fan base. They didn't choose it for the atmosphere at Kyle Field, the academics, the direction that Jimbo has the program going in, that they only chose it because how much money A&M put up. And that's what I think really grinds his gears, because Jimbo's recruiting plays on Jimbo's ego. He wants to be the best at it, just like Saban does, just like Kirby Smart does. And the fact, and that's part of the reason why he came to Texas A&M, because they have a lot of resources and they are a program that is trying to be like the next Clemson in a way, to go from kind of, you know, upper tier, you know, program, but not quite elite, to the elite. And that's why he left Florida State and cast his lot here. And I think he took that personally, both for his players and his program, that someone would accuse players of just going to A&M solely for financial reasons.
So, Sam, like, we know about, you know, A&M, and look, they do. They have tremendous resources. And, look, use them wisely. I mean, this is the landscape now. So, utilizing the landscape to the best of their ability. When does Texas catch up on that?
You know, Texas has done a really good job, honestly. They've been ahead of the curve, too. A&M started, you know, working with collectives and stuff over the course of the fall, and Texas announced a few initiatives before December signing day. They had the Horns with Heart, which I think pledged to pay every current offensive lineman $50,000 a year. And then they had their Clark Field Collective, which is their big fund that was aimed to have a $10 million war chest for NIL deals for athletes in Texas. They were ahead of the curve, and I think you saw some of the impact on recruiting, because they closed their recruiting class strong. Despite a 5-7 season, they ended with a top-5 recruiting class. Chris Del Conte, the athletic director, the other day when he was at a speaking event in Fort Worth, they're not shy about it. He said it publicly. He said, NIL is our game, and Texas is leaning in on that, and they're not shy about using it. And so I think Texas is going to be just fine. We saw Bijan Robinson not too long ago post about a deal he had with Lamborghini, and I guess he got hooked up with a Lambo. And Steve Sarkisian was talking about that yesterday when he was in Houston. So Texas has been very competitive in that. And honestly, when you talk to people around the college football, Tennessee, Texas, Texas A&M have been on the cutting edge of what you can do with NIL and with collective as ahead of all the other schools.
I just wanted to make sure we got something positive about UT in there, because with all the SEC talk and A&M, I didn't want the Longhorn listeners to feel like they were left out. You know, I had to get something in there for them.
No, they're doing a good job. I'll give them that. And they're recruiting really well, too.
You know, plus my son is going into the UT system in August. So, you know, I'm going to have to pay attention to UT a little bit more, although he's going to Dallas. He's not going to Austin, because for what his major is, it's at the Dallas campus. But, you know, I got to pay attention to UT a little bit more. My kid's gonna be part of that system. I gotta, you know, gotta go find myself, you know, some UT paraphernalia and spend some money and give it back to them in ways that I'd prefer not to. But that's how that all works out. Now, Deion Sanders' name also somehow got thrown in the mix here, and Coach Prime, as he likes to be known, I'm not gonna tell him otherwise. Coach Prime, as he likes to be known, he's been a godsend for HBCUs. He has completely changed the narrative for HBCUs. What is, I guess, the effect, how do you see the effect for NIL for HBCUs? Are they going, is it going to help them, or is NIL going to, you know, the part of the narrative around HBCUs is the, you know, the financial disparity that, you know, the big schools have millions and millions and millions of dollars on the HBCUs. They fight to get their money. Is the NIL going to help them with their athletic performances for schools that don't have a Deion Sanders? Or is it something that if you don't have someone like a Coach Prime, you're going to, it's going to be even a bigger disparity than it once was?
I think it remains to be seen. I think part of it is if you have a Coach Prime, that brand your program in such a way that I think it attracts eyeballs and it's going to attract fans and donors. I think it's less about HBCUs as a whole, and it's more about just the program and the program support. If you're a program that traditionally has a rabid fan base, if you sell out your stadiums, you have a lot of fan support, and you have passionate alumni, then you can do well in the NIL space. That goes for whether you're an HBCU, that goes for whether you're a Group of Five program, or a Power 5 program. Obviously, there's different levels to it for everybody. The Alabama and Ohio State and Texas A&M are going to live on a different planet than Houston or Iowa State or anybody like that. So, and there are going to be some schools that, quite frankly, aren't going to have the type of fan and donor and financial support to do it. But I think certainly if you win, it certainly helps. And obviously that goes part and parcel is you need players to win. And so is it a chicken or the egg? Do you get the coach first and get the, does that help you get the wins, or do you got to get the players first using NIL to get the wins? It's kind of hard to say. I think ultimately at the end of the day, you need to mix both. But ultimately, I think it depends on if you have a very active donor base, a passionate fan base that cares about the product, and a good alumni structure, alumni network, that is good for your athletes post football. I think those are the people, because those are the people doing these deals. Is you have donors that own businesses that are doing these deals and are pulling their money together, and those are the ones that are going to have the impact. So the schools that have that kind of alumni base are the ones that are going to do the best at it.
Talking with Sam Kahn Jr., college football expert with The Athletic. Now, Sam, you are a UH alum. And Tillman Fertitta has been instrumental in kind of the rebirth of UH athletics. So they got a new football stadium. They have a new basketball arena. They have a new baseball facility. And those are just the ones that I know of. I know they were doing something with the track and field stuff, too. How do we get somebody like that for Rice? Because that school is loaded. How do we get them to, like, put the cash flow all into the athletic program like their neighbors who wear red?
That's the challenge for Rice. And I think that's always been the challenge for Rice, is getting both the administration and getting the fans and donors around it to support athletics at a higher level. Obviously, Rice is in a different place. It's very much like Stanford academics or Paramount. And it is more run and operated like what we used to remember college football to be, I think, than opposed to what high-end college football is now. But they have shown some investment, you know, in the last, you know, 5-6 years. You've seen the end zone facility that they have at Rice Stadium. I was just there yesterday visiting with Mike Bloomgren. They've got a really, really nice facility, a football-only operations building, which, honestly, University of Houston doesn't even have that right now. That's been a plus for them. They have the indoor practice bubble, which has been a good addition for them, and, you know, right next to Rice Stadium. I know they announced a fundraising campaign, you know, to kind of get donors excited because they're moving to the American Athletic Conference. But yeah, either having a figure like that, whether it's a Tillman Fertitta or a John Ruiz from Miami, guys like that can really, really help a program in that way. But it doesn't necessarily have to be just one guy. It has to be a sustained effort, and there has to be some passion and motivation to win. You have to have what I like to call institutional want to. And that's one thing that, you know, I don't think it's always been there at Rice from a football perspective when it comes to the financial support it needs. Whereas Houston, I think you've seen it with Tillman, Fertitta, and even before Tillman was a huge factor as a donor in the past in the Southwest Conference there. I think Houston was very motivated and tried to be competitive at every turn when they were in the Southwest Conference. And that relentlessness that they showed helped them eventually get back into the Big 12 after getting left out. It took a long time, took almost more than 25 years to do it, but it was a constant commitment to, hey, let's get a new stadium. Hey, let's get the basketball facilities and basketball arena renovated. Hey, let's get an indoor football facility. All that stuff has to happen. You have to, I think the way Chris Lesman put it, Houston, is you have to act as if you are a Power 5 program in order to get to that point. And I think when it comes to NIL and things like that, it's the same thing. You just really honestly got to put up or shut up.
Nobody knows college football in Texas better than Sam Kahn Jr. That's why he's the Texpert with The Athletic. Follow him on Twitter at SKahn Jr. Sam, love talking with you, man. Every time I talk to you, I learn at least 5 things. Always appreciate you, my friend. We'll catch up soon.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Hi, Sam Kahn Jr. with The Athletic with us here on Late Hits.
This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
Now, for those of you who live under a rock or live in a bubble, live in places where the internet is lousy, live in places where you're not allowed to be on the internet at work, have spouses who are mean and don't let you watch sports on TV. If you're wondering what all this mess is with Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher, well, basically Nick Saban was at what amounted to a fundraiser and said not nice things about Texas A&M.
And you've read about them. You know who they are. I mean, we were second in recruiting last year. A&M was first. A&M bought every player on their team. Made a deal for name, image, and likeness. All right, we didn't buy one player. All right, but I don't know if we're going to be able to sustain that in the future because more and more people are doing it. And you've read.
So you see, he kind of first he says they bought every player. Then what I meant by that was they did a deal with name, image, and likeness. Or in other words, they did what Saban did last year with his quarterback, who got $1 million before he ever took a snap and bragged about it, as you just heard Sam Kahn talking about. But because Texas A&M was better at organizing that for, like, everybody, now he's crying and moaning and moaning like biatch, who was out on the street corner and didn't get any pickups. Boo freaking who. Dude, you're Alabama. You got Alabama to pay you, what, $11 million a year? You got them to build you all these new facilities, basically have like an entire team of people who like mop and glean the floor clean every 30 seconds, and you couldn't get a team together to figure out, hey, let's put together NIL deals for all our top prospects. We get them here, no problem. You couldn't figure that part out? Well, then you are to blame. But he directly threw A&M and his former assistant, Jimbo Fisher, not just under the bus, but like under the bulldozer, under the tractor, under every heavy farm vehicle that you could find. And Jimbo was not having it.
First of all, I'll say it's a shame that we have to do this. It's really despicable. It's despicable that somebody can say things about somebody and an organ, more importantly, 17-year-old kids. You're taking shots at 17-year-old kids and their families. And they broke state laws. They're all money. We bought every player on this group. We never bought anybody. No rules were broken. Nothing was done wrong. It was all in the way we do things, the ethics in which we do things. And these families, it's despicable that a reputable head coach could come out and say this when he doesn't get his way or things don't go his way. The narcissist in him doesn't allow those things to happen. And it's ridiculous. But when he's not on top, and the parity in college football he's been talking about, go talk to coaches who coach for him. You'll find out all the parity. Go dig into wherever he's been. You can find out anything. And it's a shame that you got to sit here and defend 17-year-old kids and families and Texas A&M because we do things right.
14 alarm fire in Tuscaloosa after Jimbo burned down the entire damn city. Also doing his best Daffy Duck. You're impeccable. Three times he said, despicable. I wonder if he also worked in a down, 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 go, 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 mine, mine, mine. Man, Jimbo was ticked. Jimbo not having it. You know, Jimbo basically went Sean Connery in The Untouchables. Oh, I see you brought a knife to a gunfight. Saban took an L, and then he took about 50 L's. And tomorrow, hopefully, there'll be audio for Deion Sanders, and there'll be more L's coming Nick Saban's way.
Well, I just seen, as I was playing that there was an article saying that he's already sort of regretting calling out Deion's school and regretting calling out Texas A&M. He's sort of walking it back and just making a blatant statement about NAL, but he targeted.
Oh,
those
he
schools,
absolutely
yeah.
targeted them. And, yeah, he went on Sirius XM College Football and tried to do the not really apology of, well, I'm sorry that I called people out specifically, but I'm not sorry I said what I said. Yeah, Nick Saban can eat the whole damn bag every single day. The whole damn bag. In fact, he can eat one and so can Dabo because that fake fraud ass, he'll be saying the same stupid stuff that Saban's saying. It'll just take him a couple of days to figure it out because he's not so smart. He's got to figure out how to work God into it. You know, everything Dabo says somehow involves God. So when Dabo comes out and talks about NIL, he will somehow work God and faith and family into it in that order. Because that train is never late. All right. We got to touch on this a little bit yesterday. But want to get more into it because, unfortunately, I only have a two-hour show and I could probably do 2 hours just on this, but we're not going to. But generational bat versus serviceable pitcher. Which way would you go? Next.
This is ESPN 97.5. Real fun sports. This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
So, you know what we got going on? We're giving away 4 packs of tickets for tomorrow night's game for the Sugarland Space Cowboys that my good friend Gerald Sanchez, the play-by-play voice, which you hear him right now on ESPN 92.5, talking about that game. We're giving away 4 packs. I'm going to give away 1 next hour, and I'm going to give away 1 right now. So, 713-780-3776. Caller number 4 gets a 4-pack for tomorrow night's game between the Sugarland Space Cowboys and the Choklahoma City Dodgers. Space Cowboys and Choklahoma City, caller 4, get a 4-pack of tickets out of Constellation Field tomorrow night for the game. Make sure you give Johnny your name and your email address so he can get your tickets for you. So when he tells you you win, don't be like, yes, I won, and hung up, because like you actually need to give us some info so that we can relay it to the Space Cowboys. I almost said that inappropriate word that rhymes with skeeters. But you gotta give Johnny the info so that you can win and go have a great time with the game with the family. If you've never been to Constellation Field. It is a great place to watch a game. There are no bad seats in the house. It is extremely fan-friendly. You will have a great time. Plus, you'll also see how much further your dollar goes when the concessions are really cheap compared to major league ballparks. But it's a great time, and you'll enjoy it. Take a minute here for Dr. Jennifer Joseph and get Physical RX physical therapy. As you guys know, I've been going to see Dr. JJ for about 5 months, and my results have been fantastic. The amount of pain that I'm no longer in just because of Dr. JJ is worth everything I will ever make. To not be in pain, to be able to turn my neck, to not be in pain, to be able to lay in my bed, put my head on my pillow, and not be in so much pain in my neck that I can't sleep. Oh, wait, there's more. It's like KTEL Records. But wait, there's more. The problem in my neck also runs down my left arm. It would prevent me from lifting my arm over my shoulder. It would make my arm go numb. My arm would be numb for days at a time. You know what it's like trying to like hold a cup when your arm is numb and you can't feel it? It makes a mess. I don't have any of these issues because I've been going to see Dr. JJ. She is Wonder Woman when it comes to removing pain. You do not need to live in pain. What you need to do is call Dr. JJ. She's got a brand new facility in North Houston. Whether it's your neck, your back, your arm, your elbow, your knee, whatever it is, she'll take care of it. Give Dr. JJ a call. 346-386-6683. 346-386-6683. Go online. GetPhysicalRx.com. GetPhysicalRx.com. So yesterday, we didn't have a whole lot of time to talk about this, but I didn't mention it yesterday. The idea of could Juan Soto find himself on the trade block? Right? The Nationals stink. They're up for sale. And as everybody here in Houston knows, when a team goes up for sale, well, quite often the owner strips down the team because least amount of expenses equals most amount of profit. You might recall once upon a time, the Astros had a deal with the Nationals for one Bryce Harper. That deal was agreed to. It was done. But at the last second, the owners of the Nationals, the Lerner family, they went, all right, no, we're not going to do it. And instead, Bryce Harper, who was a free agent at the end of the year, well, he walked. And they got a compensatory draft pick. Ooh. Not exactly the compensation you should get for a generational player. Juan Soto is a generational player. He's 23, and he's already one of the five best players in baseball. And there is no reason to think that he won't be for the next decade. Although, as we saw from that Mets game the other day, we do need to work on his base running skills. But the guy is an unbelievable talent. He is a phenomenal bat. And just the idea of Juan Soto patrolling left field at Minute Maid Park for a decade, I kind of get excited in ways I shouldn't get excited. Tuck and right, Soto and left, Jordan DHing, Breggy at third, Haney at
him
short.
And Jordan in the same lineup.
I mean, I'm feeling like.
Sounds illegal.
Like, ooh. It's like tingly. It's like warm and tingly. Like if you think the offense is good now, well, hot damn! Juan Soto is the only player in baseball that I would give Hunter Brown up in a deal for. The only one. And I know that every time I talk about, you know, what the Astros, because we talked about the Astros, how they didn't spend the money on Correa. And, you know, I gave you the idea of if they had spent the money on Correa, ultimately, Michael Brantley won't be here next year. You could have Jordan in left, Peña at second, Correa at short, Altuve DHing. And, like, that lineup would be really good, and your infield defense would be the best in baseball. Like, not even close. But since they didn't go that route, all right, well, what's something else they could do? Well, imagine Soto in left with Tuck and Jordan and Breggs and Peña. I mean, that doesn't suck. That's pretty damn good. You know, eventually Corey Lee's going to be here behind the plate, not Martin Maldonado. They'll have a catcher who could hit. Certainly more than 118. You know, they'll figure out first base. I mean, I don't know if they'll go year to year with Yuli. I mean, J.J. Mateusiewicz is having a really nice start at Sugarland this year. If you don't know much about him, that's understandable, because if you look up, like, Astros' top prospects lists, he's not on any of them. He's 25 or 26, a little older prospect. And realistically, he's never put up the kind of numbers that he's putting up right now. He's never hit like this. Now, last year, Jake Myers was like a breakout guy. He wasn't a big prospect in the system. He showed tools, but he never put it together. But last year, everything clicked for Jake Myers. He had a monster season at AAA and then wound up getting called up here and was the center fielder for most of the second half and going into the postseason before he tore his labrum. So Mateusiewicz, coming into this season, never hit the way they hit it. Right now, J.J. Mateusiewicz going into tonight, 322 average, 8 homers, 23 ribs, in 90 at-bats. Got a 415 on base and a 1071 OPS. Those are big numbers. Last year, in splitting time between Corpus and Sugarland, he hit a combined 254. Hit 25 homers. Over 402 at-bats. So not a bad homer rate, but 16 of those 25 were at AAA, where he, you know, played more than the majority of the season. But at AAA, 245 average, 325 on base, 829 OPS. Those numbers are okay. They're not prospect numbers. You're not a guy that the team is looking at as somebody that they're going to make an everyday first baseman with those kind of numbers. Did he put it together this year the way that Jake Myers put it together last year? Mateusiewicz is now 26. So you're not really a prospect when you're 26. But here he is, 6 foot, 205 pounds or so. So he's not like a huge, like 6'4 monster first baseman. But he's a guy who has, you know, he played at Arizona. This year, everything is clicking for him. Sometimes guys are late bloomers. Sometimes it takes a while, but then when it clicks, it clicks. That's why it's so important to see, can Jake Myers replicate what he did last year? Has it permanently clicked, or was last year a one-off? Hopefully it permanently clicked. He's got every tool. Mateusiewicz has been like the number one. He's been the top bat for the Space Cowboys this year. And if he can put a whole season together, maybe he gets himself into the conversation to be the first baseman next year. Because I don't think it's going to be Yuli. Yuli's not getting any younger. I love Yuli as a player, but if we're going to be real, Yuli's going to be 38 next month. And as much as I love Yuli, if we're going to be real, we've got legitimate issues when it comes to Yuli's power. Right? He had 31 homers in 2019, and then he hit 6 homers in 2020. He hit 15 last year, led the league in hitting, but you only needed 319 to lead the league in hitting. But he only had 15 home runs in 605 plate appearances. Had a much better walk rate than he's ever had. This year, you know, we're a full month in. He's got three homers. He's got 13 doubles. But he's got three homers. And I love Yuli. He's a, even with a gold glove, he is an underrated defensive player. He is tremendous. But I'm waiting for him to find the bat. If you're going to play first base, you got to have a bat. That doesn't mean I wouldn't want to see Yuli still on the team. But if the bat is starting to go, he's hitting 242 with a 280 on base, a 700 OPS. Those numbers are not going to cut it as an everyday first baseman. I expect he will get hot. If he doesn't, we're talking about Yuli as a utility player and not as a starting player for next season. Could J.J. Mattingevic work his way into that conversation of, you know, can you be an everyday first baseman? Can he work his way in? Because a full season where he hits 322 and he hits a ton of bombs, he'll get himself into that conversation. Now, it's Juan Soto versus starting pitching. But what kind of starting pitching is likely to be available? We'll get into that next.
This is Heisman Trophy winner Troy Smith, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5. Go Bucks.